If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Ellie Cawthorne, staff writer on BBC History Magazine. Before we begin, I want to tell you about a special offer we are running for podcast listeners, where you can enjoy a one-month free trial to all the premium content on historyextra.com, as well as a free edition of BBC History Magazine for Apple and Android devices. Head to subscribe.historyextra.com/podcast to find out more.
It's very possible that these buildings can go up in smoke, and that's an awful thing. But out of these horrible, these tragedies, many of them have been reborn, reshaped, recreated and redesigned.
That was Emma Wells talking about Notre Dame Cathedral.
You're listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available across the globe in print and digital formats. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. On Monday night, a terrible fire caused extensive damage to one of Paris and indeed France's greatest landmarks, the medieval Notre Dame Cathedral. In today's episode, you'll hear from Dr. Emma Wells of the University of York about the fascinating history of the building and the reasons why this blaze has caused such sadness around the world. Putting the questions to her was our staff writer, Ellie Cawthorne.
What was your reaction when you heard the news about the fire at Notre Dame on Monday?
Well, I think we were all absolutely sort of devastated, horrified, shocked. However, fire within cathedrals, unfortunately, does happen and happens quite a lot. We have seen it throughout the centuries. I know some may say that, this doesn't happen. Fire doesn't happen in Gothic cathedrals. And often that is the case. We saw it more in Romanesque, Norman cathedrals, because there was a lot more timber. But I think, as we have seen in the images, there is a forest of timber. It is called the forest in the roof. And therefore, with timber, and with metal, the metal gets extremely, extremely hot. Therefore, it's very possible that these buildings can go up in smoke. And that's an awful thing. But out of these tragedies, many of them have been reborn, reshaped, recreated and redesigned. And that's also how we've got these great innovations. So an absolute tragedy, but there's certainly hope for the future.
The news has obviously triggered a massive reaction. Why do you think Notre Dame holds such an important place in the heart of the French nation and is such an iconic building?
For several reasons, really, well, for so many reasons, in fact. It is, in terms of its architectural history, it is an extremely important building. De Sully, who built the cathedral back in 1163, who started the first Gothic cathedral as we see it today, he wanted to sort of make an architectural standpoint, as it were, to help launch a revolution in Gothic architecture. He was seeing what was going on down the road at Saint-Denis. He saw great, not only, you know, large, expansive, but tall buildings filled full of light, which they hadn't seen before. They were sort of used to these Romanesque buildings that were a little bit more, you know, dark with the great large columns. And as a result, he wanted to emulate this. He wanted a building that would rival it in Paris, to show, in fact, that Paris was not only the political, but the economic and the religious, the spiritual hub, the capital of France. So as a result, we get this extremely large, huge building. I mean, when you see it on the images, you can see it's an icon, a landmark in Paris. And it was the first to have sort of four stories in height, extremely large. And it was this was achieved via flying buttresses. So this sort of skeletal cage structure that we see, which sort of surrounds Notre Dame. This was achieved through the flying buttresses, which tuck the weight and the force outwards and downwards. And therefore, that allowed the architects to build upwards. But what's sort of quite interesting and important is that although they were building in this Gothic style, although they were building these great, you know, expansive, heightened buildings, in the nave, they actually were using Romanesque capitals, Romanesque columns, pillars. Building on the site of a Roman temple to Jupiter, though. So the original site was Saint-Étienne, so a basilica, and then the Gothic church was built on top. So essentially what the architects were doing, what de Sully was doing, was referencing the past, so referencing these Roman origins. And through building upwards, they were sort of going into modernity, so referencing the past, but moving into the present. So an extremely innovative, modern approach to building, and therefore an extremely important architectural achievement.
You mentioned earlier about some of the medieval construction techniques. So your thought is that the Gothic structure isn't necessarily particularly vulnerable to fire. This is just really a case of bad luck.
In our sort of Romanesque buildings that we have seen, that we saw before Gothic buildings, you know, the Romanesque style forms or Gothic, there was a lot more timber. There was a lot more timber. A lot of the roofs were timber. And then we get, in the Gothic period, we have the stone, the rib vaulting, and that's what we see here at Notre Dame. And as a result, these sorts of rib vaults create a sort of barrier between and a sort of protection. There is a sort of fireproof protection in the middle of, in between the timber and in between the stone. So they act as a barrier so that rather than just the whole roof going up in smoke and therefore just shattering to pieces, as it were, that's why the building that we see today is still, there's essentially a skeleton there. It is still standing, if you see what I mean. It's still, there's still a structure there. So if the vaults, if things that have sort of reached a high temperature and the vault had essentially come down, that would have been it would have been a lot worse. We would have seen a lot worse, really. But I mean, the timber itself, there is a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong, as you will have seen, it's referred to as a forest, and that's what supports the roof. I mean, some of those wooden beams are 100 meters long. They date back to the 13th century. we may not ever find a forest large enough to replace them. But with that, the heat from the fire reached probably about, 800 to 1,000 degrees, which completely decimated the roof. And as we've also seen, there was extensive water damage. And so the stone has weathered quite a lot of the storm, yes. But, and so although it seems like it's standing, the mortar that's holding it will have been exposed to these extreme temperatures.
Many cathedrals have been damaged by fire or other natural disasters over time. Could you give us some examples and how the communities behind those buildings dealt with those disasters?
Yes, I mean, there's been so many Gothic cathedrals that have gone up in smoke. Sort of famously, Canterbury Cathedral on 5th September 1174. We know from Gervase of Canterbury, there are primary sources that Anselm's glorious choir went up in smoke. Again, it's timber that was the fault there. We also have seen, so many others. Chichester, there was a fire there in 1114. So building of the nave started there in 1114, out of the fire in 1114. And then even again, in the late 12th century, there was another fire which destroyed a lot of the church, a lot of the city. So that resulted in another rebuilding effort and rededication of the church. York Minster, there was the huge fire of the south transept in 1984 due to the strike of lightning. And again, that was because of the roof was timber. In 1829, there was a fire because of an arson, a man who came in. And as a result, he set the choir alight. It was an act of arson. He hid in the north transept. But as a result, what we found out through John Brown, the clerk of works, he realised that the columns of the nave extended far beneath the ruined floor of the choir. So he revealed the true extent of the undiscovered Norman crypt. So that's what I was sort of saying earlier about we can discover things. Things could be reborn from this rubble. So, there has been so much that has come out of some of the fires in the past.
And Notre Dame itself has actually been damaged in the past as well, hasn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes. It's seen a lot through its years. It's been the victim of sort of destruction and restoration. We'll say that's two different things. In the 16th century, as part of the resistance to persecution, the Huguenots raided it. It rid it of all its statues and its images because they were considered idolatrous. And in the midst of Louis XIV's reign, then there was a sort of further controversial, we'll call it a restoration, because there was a huge transformation of architectural taste. It's sort of what they wanted to do was completely eradicate what they saw as the medievalism. So the rood screen was taken down, which was studded with sculptures, and perhaps most tragically, the stained glass. So that's the 12th and the 13th century glass was replaced with completely clear, plain glass as the sort of jewel tones that we sort of love and associate with stained glass were seen to be just, out of taste, as it were. However, that wasn't all. In the 1790s, the cathedral fell to victim to the French Revolution. And it was even sort of de-Christianized. It was seen as a temple of reason. And became the cult of the supreme being. It was rededicated to the cult of the supreme being. And as a result, again, stripped of any ornament, removed and decapitated statues, many tombs destroyed. So, it's gone through its fair share of hurt and heartache. After sort of the revolution and the renovations and the restorations, whatever you want to call it, throughout the several centuries previous to, it actually bounced back. Notre Dame sort of bounced back in the 19th century. So what happened was in the very early 19th century, Napoleon Bonaparte signed a concord with the Holy See that the Catholic Church would take back control of the cathedral. And it's essentially he wanted to be crowned within the cathedral as emperor. And so a cleanup operation began to rebuild it and repair the windows because it wasn't in a very good state at this time. So that took place. However, it wasn't in the greatest shape by that time, but its sort of real saviour came in the 1830s. And oddly enough, it was via Victor Hugo's Hunchback of Notre Dame, the publication of that. Victor Hugo himself was a leading light of French monasticism. And he, through his novel, he drew attention to the cathedral's plight by spearheading a sort of resurgence of interest in the medieval Gothic past. You know, he sort of built up the fact that Notre Dame was such an important icon to Parisians and the French, and that it was in this such sort of degraded state. In 1844, Louis-Philippe, the new king of France, entrusted the project to two architects, and the main one was sort of Viollet-le-Duc. And the Duke himself, he sort of started this, and was sort of the main spearhead behind it, started this sort of an imaginative reconstruction based on contemporaneous medieval artworks and sources. And it lasted for about 25 years. So what he did was it included the renovation of the destroyed stained glass windows. He replaced them with his new designs. New bells were recast to replace the old melted ones. They had been melted down in the 18th century to make cannon. And then new statues were carved. And also the spire that went down in the flames, that was actually a 19th century Le Duc reconstruction, which was modelled on the original 13th century spire and bell tower that was taken down in the 1780s. So what he did was sort of a 19th century medievalism intended to recreate this sort of monument of France's past. So it actually became the sort of icon and beacon of Parisian and French culture that we know and that we think of when we think of Notre Dame today.
Picking up on your point about the famous rose windows, much of the concern when the fire was breaking out was about their fate, and still they seem to have been salvaged, but there's a lot of concerns about whether they'll be damaged. Why were they so significant, and why are they such an important part of the building?
They are an extremely important feat of engineering, these sort of oculi, these very round, intricate tracery, you know, as I say, skeletal type structures are such a feat of Gothic engineering. The West Rose is perhaps the earliest. This dates from, I think it's around 1205. It represents, the iconography represents virtues and the vices, the lobes of the month, the signs of the zodiac. Then we have in the north transept, a little bit later, sort of mid-13th century, was the best preserved of the three. This was an extremely important window because it represented the Virgin Mary. It had the Christ, the Virgin holding the Christ child surrounded by the Old Testament characters, so the 16 prophets, the 32 judges and kings. So as the cathedral was dedicated to the Virgin Mary, it was sort of an embodiment of that. And then the south rose depicted, this was sort of, again, a little bit later, but still 13th century, depicted the life of St. Matthew and the infancy of Christ. So the theme was the last judgment of Christ surrounded by the angels and the Virgin. That was severely altered in a fire, sort of in the destruction and in the 19th century. Viollet-le-Duc in the 19th century, he restored that. So there are sort of bits and pieces of the original glass. But the point is that, well, 13th century, very early 13th century glass, there is so little of it in the world left and in such great condition, let alone within these beautiful rose oculi, you know, intricate traceried windows. That is why it's so important, because there just aren't these examples, you know, anymore elsewhere. You know, York has a few, you know, there are other cathedrals that have a few, but in this sort of amount, no.
The cathedral is also home to many important religious relics and artefacts. What do we know about the fate of some of those?
From what I've heard, they seem to have been rescued. Although this is debatable, we need to find out more about this. There's the relic of Saint-Louis, but there's also, as we know, the Crown of Thorns is an extremely important, extremely significant relic. There's also fragments of the True Cross, one of the holy nails. But on top of that, you know, those aside, of course, they're extremely important. But on top of that, in the sacristy, there's a number of priceless items, including, you know, medieval manuscripts, jewels, chalices, crosses, some of the most revered religious and cultural objects from medieval Europe. As I say, we've heard that they have been rescued. Let's just hope that that is the case. And I mean, it's not just that they are of medieval origin, but we just don't have other examples of these. These can never be replicated, and that's why it's so important that they are.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Macron has stated that he intends to start the restoration process as soon as possible and that he's hoping it will be back up and running within 5 years. How possible do you think that sounds?
It's extremely difficult. It's an extremely difficult question to answer at this stage until work sort of moves on in terms of understanding the damage. There is such a huge process to go through in order to find out, you know, what state it is in. You know, extensive works must take place at the time of a fire, you know, and there was also huge scaffolding covering much of its exterior. It was in a state of renovation. So that's in point. So even the fact that, you know, the scaffolding that was already up there will have to be delicately taken down because it will have suffered with this, these huge, huge masses of heat. You know, then we have to come in, we have to put protective covers in, we have to shield it from the wind and the rain, because that's a problem at the moment. You know, it is exposed to the elements. Then there's the whole issues with cleaning out the debris. You know, the debris won't just be forgotten and removed. You know, that will be analysed, that will be looked at. You know, what can we learn from this? And then, you know, buildings archaeologists will come in order to record the building, the surviving fragments, the surviving stone and artwork, to, in order to see what can be salvaged. And then from there, you know, the sort of rubble is moved out, surveyors come in, safety will be the prime consideration. And then from there, it goes so on and so forth. So my point there being is it is such a lengthy process, even to get it to the point of starting again, starting from, you know, from day one. So I think 5 years is perhaps... Yes, I think we'll be looking a little bit longer than that.
He's also stated that he wants to make Notre Dame more beautiful than ever before. It raises an interesting question about how you go about restoring a historic building after such a kind of dramatic event as this. Do you try and replace what was there, or do you go for something drastically different? What's your take?
I think this is a very interesting question, and I don't think that there is a particularly right answer. I mean, it's a very subjective question. However, in the 21st century, well, if we take England, for example, the conservation ideology that we take today tends not to be let's replicate what we saw in the past if a very large element of it has gone. The approach we take today is more conservation, so conserve what we have in order that we can, you know, continue its life for generations to come. We don't take the approach as much to as restoration, so we don't get rid of what was there and create something new or something more beautiful or, you know, emulate the medieval. I think it's difficult to answer the question at the moment because we don't know the extent of the damage. Do we leave it as it is and leave it as a monument and a testament to time, history, culture? Or do we rebuild as it was, or do we create an entirely modern approach? I think perhaps the latter might be an idea, you know, some sort of glass structure that allows you to see through and see what happened and just see what is left. But it entirely depends in what state things, you know, things are in. But considering these sorts of things have happened in the past, considering fires happening in the past, these sorts of things can be conserved, you know, not just entirely restored, it can be conserved. So, you know, we just need to see. We just need to wait and see, I think.
So do you feel hopeful about Notre Dame's future?
I do feel entirely hopeful. We can't be anything but hopeful, I suppose. You know, we have built in the past, we built Notre Dame, we have rebuilt it throughout the years, throughout the centuries. Therefore, we can continue to do so. Of course, it is a substantial loss. We have, you know, we have witnessed many losses, however, over the years in our cathedrals. But, you know, there has to be a silver lining. And the silver lining is that although we may have witnessed huge destruction here, huge loss, as I say, it allows for us to go in and see, A, what is there, and B, what happened in the past. So buildings archaeologists, buildings historians can come in, architects, etc., surveyors. They can uncover more about the history than of the building than ever before, more about the archaeology, which that is a very small silver lining. And as a result, we can use that in order to inform us about the best approach to take to the building in its state. We can also learn about the craft of our medieval forebears, and, well, not just our medieval forebears, but, you know, throughout the early modern period and so on and so forth. And I think that's an important point to make, is there are these craftsmen with such skills still. You know, there are master masons, there are glaziers that still have their workshop beside these cathedrals. If they were not there to this day, we wouldn't have such cathedrals that are still intact. Without their work, without their skills, there wouldn't even be a Notre Dame up until Monday. So that's important to point out.
That was Dr. Emma Wells. Look out for a piece by her on Notre Dame Cathedral in our June issue, which is on sale in a few weeks' time. And in the meantime, you can read more about the story on historyextra.com. OK, so that's about all for today, but we will be back on Monday when David Reynolds will be discussing the Allied leaders of World War II.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Ben Hewitt and Jack Bateman. You can catch up with past episodes on historyextra.com, where you'll also find thousands of articles on all different aspects of history, as well as our special subscriber-only area, the library.